Our next topic is lights off, risks on, short-term insurance, dark nights. The speakers will be Amanda Tronco and Janine Wilson. Amanda is a manager in the general insurance team at Deloitte in Joburg. She graduated from UCT with a degree in actuarial science and has been working in the general insurance consulting industry for the past 4.5 years, of which 1.5 years have been at Deloitte. Janine is an associate director in the same team. She's a qualified actuary with a practicing certificate in short-term insurance and microinsurance, and she's been working in consulting for over 10 years. Both Amanda and Janine were interested in the topic that they are presenting today, as it's been a reality in our lives over the last couple of years and has forced us to adapt in various aspects of our lives, including the work that we do in the short-term insurance space. Thank you, Amanda and Janine.
Cool. Testing. Cool. Morning, everyone. I think it's still morning. Well, just good day. My name is Amanda, and I'll be here with my colleague Janine presenting on, I think you can see from the picture and you can tell, basically what we've seen over the previous years become our reality and a crisis in the South African landscape. Before we start our presentation, just a couple of things. We do not have all the answers. So some of the questions that you might have, we probably also kind of have at the back of our heads. The main purpose of our presentation is basically to share information and insights in terms of our observations from the previous years. So yeah, I'll get right into it. So in terms of the agenda of our presentation, our presentation is basically split into two sections. The first section being looking back, and what we'll look at here is basically the history of our load shedding as South Africa and what impacts this has had in the short-term industry. And then the second part, Janine is going to basically take us into looking forward, where we'll look at some of the key risks that come with our energy crisis, which would be a total blackout, and some of the opportunities that the short-term industry can look at in terms of our energy problems. So just to start off, what is load shedding? I think from the brain power in this room, everyone has probably Googled this. And this actually turned out to be the number 8 of the top 10 Google searches in 2022. And I just have a very simple illustrative example of what we can basically explain the energy or the issues that we're experiencing currently to be. So on the left, so we have a scale there, and on your left side you have basically the supply side, and that would be typically come from your Eskom and your imports in South Africa, and then on the right side you would have your demand side. That would be demand that comes from your individuals, your domestic and commercial customers. There's also the part where you would also see exports, as we all know that South Africa also exports some of their electricity to some of the Southern African region countries within those regions. So in this instance, you have your supply side meeting your demand side, or you have your supply side outweighing your demand side. In that case, no one has a problem. We all have our lights on. But unfortunately, that's not our reality as South Africa. This is a picture that we have. And what we have there is basically an issue where the level of electricity in supply is not enough to meet our demand. And which brings us to our current reality as South Africa and the current bout of load shedding we've been experiencing, which is basically related to the inadequate national energy supply to meet our demand. And this is for a bunch of reasons, one of them being due to the unpaid maintenance that's basically required at some of our power stations. And even with some of the new generating units that have come up over time, those have also faced various challenges in terms of bringing some power units online. The next part, basically, what electrical outages are not a new thing. We have seen some of the similar experiences across the world, and this is a part of the presentation which I call "We're Not Alone," as Michael Jackson once said. as you can see, basically what we have here is we got data from the World Bank, and they do surveys across some of the firms across the globe and basically measure certain metrics. And one of the metrics that's being presented here is the percentage of firms that would have reported experiencing an electrical outage at any point in time. You'll see on the leaderboard, as expected, where South Africa sits is the sub-Saharan African region, which is sitting at around 75.7% of firms that would have been surveyed reporting an electrical outage at a certain point in time. We have the Latin America and Caribbean region following closely, and the South Asian region at 53.2%. And at the first bar, you would see if on aggregated view, we would have looked at all the countries that would have been surveyed, and the view is showing that half of the firms that would have been surveyed would have reported experiencing an electrical outage at a certain point in time. And then we also managed to get a view of the average number of electrical outages that have been reported and the duration or the average duration of the electrical outage that would have been reported. We have South Asia leading. Surprise, surprise. I was hoping this was going to happen. okay, cool. Let's wait for this to come back. Cool, we're back on. So as I was saying, so we can see South Asia, they're leading the pack with around an average number of 11.7 outages reported for an average of 3.6 hours. And then again, Sub-Saharan Africa region at 8.2 average number of electrical outages reported, leading the pack in terms of the duration of hours that an electrical interruption would have been reported. So just moving back to our view as South Africa and basically where we would have come and where we are right now, we first had our third load shedding experience in 2007. And then things were quiet for about 6 years after that until we had our load shedding come back in the years 2014 to 2015. And in between those 2 years, we experienced around about 973 hours of load shedding. Comes 2016, our then president announces the end of load shedding as we know it. Everyone is happy. We thought, yeah, this is our time. And the 2 years, we had the 2 years of bliss only to have the return of load shedding 2.0 in 2018. And we had about 127 hours of load shedding reported in that year alone. And then comes 2019 to 2021, things do not look any better. We have our first stage four in 2019, just to put it into context. I don't know if you guys know, but how the stages work is that for instance, if you're at stage one, it means we need to shed about 1,000 megawatts of energy, stage two, 2,000, stage three, 3,000 and going forward. So at stage four, you would be looking at shedding around about 4,000 megawatts. And to put that into context, the Medupi power station has generating capacity of 4,800 megawatts. So you're looking at having to shed the amount of capacity that power station would be generating at a point in time. So if we're looking at the years 2019, 2020, and 2021, as you can see, the numbers are not going any lower. and then comes last year, we have our first experience of stage five and six again. And in 2022 alone, we reported more than 3,000 hours of load shedding. And now we're in 2023. And to date, we already know that we've exceeded the number of hours of load shedding that we would have experienced in 2022. Currently, I think we're running at more than 4,700 hours of load shedding to date. Again, we don't have all the answers. We don't know what this means. We don't know what the rest of the year kind of looks like, what next year looks like. Are we going to stage 7 or stage 8? We'll wait and see. I think, again, this is a similar, this kind of points, puts the picture that I would have presented earlier again to perspective. This is data from one of, I think this is the app that every South African would use, which is Eskom's Push, which would basically tracked the load staging stages. And as you can see, as I mentioned earlier, you'll see stage 4 pop up there for the first time in 2019. And then you see stage 5 and 6 coming through in the years 2022. And you can already see in the view of 2023 that we're already rocking 2022 numbers and more already. So I think we kind of have a picture of how grim things look as based on where we are right now. What we just want to look at, and the purpose of our presentation was basically to look at what this means for the short-term industry and what this has meant and how we've seen the industry basically respond to some of these impacts, which is the second part of this presentation. So just looking at it, we've already seen this has gained a lot of traction and a lot of and a lot of airtime. A whole lot of insurers and reinsurers have explicitly updated their policy wording to exclude any, basically explicitly stating that load shedding or grid failure is not an insurable risk, even though claims related to load shedding are still covered, but any claims relating to grid failure would not be covered by insurers, and reinsurers have also stated the same, which puts pressure in terms of components, other components within the insurance industry, one of them being the second point, increasing premiums. This is one area where we've seen insurers also try to respond to the worsening claims experience, which would come about as a result of load shedding conditions. So as we know, there's a lot of power surge claims that would come about as a result of electrical devices that would be impacted as a result of frequent load shedding. Also, with less with much more frequent load shedding stages or longer periods of having your power out, the traffic lights wouldn't work, which means you have more accident-prone conditions. Also, your safety or security alarm systems would be down, which would also provide an would result in an impact in your crime rates as well. And the more darker it is, the more you would also have instances of crime as well. And the other components that we've also seen. Is basically some insurers trying to require their policyholders to install power surge devices to try limit the impact on claims. And lastly, we've also seen insurers trying to provide more information and advice to some of their policyholders to try limit their risk. So providing advice in terms of how to take care of the electronic devices and their security and all of that stuff by installing backup systems and the likes in order to try limit the risks that would arise as a result of experiencing load shedding. I will now hand over to my colleague Janine, who's basically going to take us to the second part of the presentation. And yeah, over to you, Janine.
Thanks, Amanda. So now I get to do the fun part of looking forward, and it's not just looking forward to lunch. So the first thing that we wanted to do was to try get an understanding of what a total blackout would look like. So up front, I would say that the likelihood of a blackout is very small. Due to the works that have been done by Eskom with load shedding, the likelihood of a blackout is very small, but the impacts would be quite severe. So we thought, what's the best way to explain what a blackout would look like for South Africa? And the way that we thought about doing it was through a real life example. So we look at Venezuela, which in 2019 had a total blackout. So this started on the 7th of March. There was an explosion at one of their power plants, and this is not my fault. Okay. So there you go. Looking at Venezuela in 2019. So it started on the 7th of March, and what happened is there was an explosion in one of their power plants, and this caused an overload of overload on all of their electrical systems. The blackout lasted 7 days, where there was a complete blackout, but they were able to get some of their power back on. Then again, on the 25th to the 28th of March, they had partial blackouts for 3 days. The end of the 28th, they managed to get the power back on, only for the next day to have a complete countrywide blackout. That evening, managed to get the power back on to have another full day country load blackout. So in total, they had 10 days of full blackout, and they estimated that they lost $200 million per day. So what did this look like? Well, the first thing is without any electricity, you have no access to water because the pumps are not able to provide water to the households or to anyone. So what you see here in these photos is residents and people in the country collecting water from anywhere they could. They collected them from sewerages, from streams, from any place that they were getting to. Water wasn't necessarily all safe and clean, so there was an increase and a spike in illnesses. So could you just imagine what the queue at Newlands would look like after I experienced the drought in 2018, which was a long enough queue, but when there's no water, you could just imagine the mild panic that's happening there. As well, all the shops had to close, so you can imagine a lot of the food, refrigeration food went off, but also shops were struggling to get payments. From the explosion, it took out the telecommunications, so they couldn't make card payments. ATMs were working, but people were rushing to the ATMs to get cash. Shops started accepting foreign currency, but eventually a lot of the shops closed down. With no electricity, there is no news. So what you see here in the first picture is the opposition leader talking to the masses and giving them a discussion of what's happening, but also trying to create a bit of a rally going. Schools were down, so all children were home from school. There was no public transport. The metro rails were down. And it also wiped out one of their biggest aluminium plants, as well as a few of their iron smelters, because as the power came back on, it just caused issues to the equipment. Hospitals, obviously, were without power. I read an article about a man who came in with gunshot wounds, and they amputated him immediately because they were worried about complications an operation because they didn't have any power. So you kind of get the sense that they were really looking at like a war zone type situation in these hospitals. Do the best you can with what you've got. And then the inevitable happened. Looting started happening. 350 stores were looted within 2 days. This was mainly driven by people's desire for gas and water. But you can just see from these photos that it looks like a horror story. Here's some more photos of the looting. So quite a crazy scene. So what could we expect if we had a blackout in South Africa? Again, stating that this would be quite low because of the work that's been done by Eskom with their load shedding. But if it did have to happen, the impacts would be quite severe. So firstly, it would happen almost immediately, there would be no forewarning, we'd just suddenly have no power at all. Eskom then estimate that it would take between 6 to 14 days to restart the power. So similar to the way a car needs to be kick-started, so does an electrical grid. Now, typically what happens is you'd use a surrounding country to help kick-start those grids. We don't have that option available, so we'd need to use a generator to start a small power station, use that power station to start another one, and so forth. So 6 to 14 days is what they estimate to restart. Obviously, issues throughout that. But then it would take between 3 to 4 weeks to repair. So you could pretty much expect partial power for at least 4 weeks. So what would happen then? Again, we'd also probably expect closing of businesses, except there are a lot of companies that are putting contingency plans in place. The JSC have said that they can withstand total blackout for 7 days, and so the market would be able to keep on going. And a lot of banks have put in a lot of contingency in place, so ATMs would still be working throughout the blackout. Then we would also probably expect close of schools. So I'm just rehashing COVID-19, but luckily my kids are a bit older. An economic recession, looting would be expected, as well as a run on diesel. You would expect that a lot of people would go out as quickly as they could, get as much diesel as they can to generate, to power their generators at home. And as well, we'd also expect that there'd be quite an increase in cable theft. With no power running through those cables, we'd expect that those cables would also would then be stolen. So add extra days on that, 6 to 14 days, to get the powers back on. So it looks like doom and gloom, and it definitely looks like an uninsurable risk. And this is further exaggerated by Sasria putting out this article 526 saying that they will not cover a total grid failure. So they won't pay for any losses or damages should that occur. They would also not pay for any strikes or riots following the failure. And this also applies to any consequential or indirect losses, so such as food going off, sewerages, telecommunications, or sewerage supply. So what does this mean for insurers? So as Amanda said earlier, a lot of insurers have started putting in quite a lot of exclusions, and clearly something like this is not a insurable risk. But there is some opportunities for insurers. I don't know if you want me to continue or wait for the slides to come back on. Happy for me to continue. Cool. Okay, so some great opportunities. So what I would expect and what we've seen in the market that this is a total blackout scenario is not something that insurers are keeping on the ORSA, and it's not maybe necessarily the right place to keep it. But I would expect it would be somewhere there on the risk register. But again, because the likelihood is low, this occurring in the ORSA is not necessary. But we definitely do see that there's some items for strategic planning. So considering if there was a total blackout, insurers could think about what do we need to put in place now to make sure that we could withstand a total blackout. So the obvious one is that there's an increase in claims. So this is one that I think most insurers have started thinking about by putting in a lot of exclusions. And although it's difficult to find data that says load shedding or blackouts cause more accidents, there may be some sort of correlation there. So, and there may be increase in fires at homes because people are using candles, there may be increase in thefts. But there's definitely an area that we see here that there's an opportunity for collaboration and partnership, which I'll talk to you about in a bit. Then there's the economic recession. So looking at the Venezuela situation, in the although they had an economic recession, it was there were some sectors that were actually less impacted than others. So something like being invested in oil actually did well during their blackouts. So I think insurers looking at what kind of investment opportunities and hedging strategies could they put into. For example, going into long on diesel would be an easy one in my mind. Then there could be an increased expectation of lapses, and this could be exaggerated by an economic recession. So it's difficult to really reduce the impacts of lapses unless you look at putting longer-dated policies for your policyholders, which I'll speak to a bit later. That's ignoring impacts on IFRS 17, obviously. Then premium collection. Again, this could be an issue, although I know that banks are putting in a lot of contingency in place here. But I think for this one, and as well as a reduction in new business, is something that insurers just need to make sure that throughout that period, let's call it the 4 weeks, would they be able to survive? Do they have enough liquid assets? Do they have enough liquid cash? Do they have capital and that sort of thing to survive for those 4 weeks if they got no new premiums in and if they had no new business? Okay, I've got my screen back. Okay, so we're going on to the last one, which is opportunities for short-term insurers. So we're almost there at the end, so we're almost at lunch, don't worry, guys. Okay, so there's obviously, and I wish I could show you the graph because it's really nice. Oh, there we go. Okay. You saw it, though. So, I mean, I'll talk to it and I'll get to the slides at a later stage. But basically, there's been an increase in the number of inverters and solar panels that we've imported into this country. More in the first quarter of this year than all the previous years put together. A lot of noddings in the room, meaning I think a lot of people here have solar panels there. Okay, and see, there's the beautiful graph. So I think there's a lot of opportunities. Dark night. A lot of opportunities for insurers to possibly look at maybe partnering with solar panels or inverter companies. So what an insurance company could do, for example, is say, okay, to your policyholder, I will pay for the installation of your solar panels, but then you enter into this 5-year contract where we'll cover your solar panels and that sort of thing. So looking at, that would also decrease the lapses, and now you've got this policyholder on book for there. Other options or other partnerships could look at lower LSMs, which may not be putting in solar. You could look at partnering with the neighborhood or partnering with security companies, for example, where you're getting the critical mass together and they're all getting insurance cover, for example, or you're getting in this partnership with the security company where you are focusing on a specific area and that's hopefully decreasing some of the claims that may come out from load shedding and a blackout. The other thing that I'd say about solar panels, and this is wearing my climate risk hat, is that the impact that we have on the climate using solar panels definitely has had a positive effect. So South Africa is ahead of the curve in terms of transitioning to day zero due to our reduction in carbon emissions. It's funny, but it's an unintentional consequence of load shedding. So, I mean, with this, we really can encourage, as insurers, we can really encourage like solar panels, and we can really do our bit to decrease our impact on the climate. And then just to say, I think it's also really important that insurers ensure that during this time when everyone's running out and going crazy with solar panels, is that they're educating their policyholders on making sure that they're getting a reputable company in, they're getting the compliance certificates and all of that, because you don't want an increase in fires from people putting up these solar panels or the inverters or the generators and doing it as quickly as they can due to panic, and making sure that everything is done in the correct way. And I think it's up to insurers to really push that story. Then there's some other cover that we expect that also have an opportunity for insurance companies, so surge cover. According to the South African Insurance Association, surge cover went up in South Africa by 15% in 2022. So although excluded from some policies, it can have its own cover on its own with quite nice premiums for that sort of cover. And then there's also standalone cover, so something on generators or UPSs or commercial companies with backup power. Yeah, so that is the end. You guys can't see my face, but it's on that side. We're happy to take any questions. yeah, thanks for listening.
All right, we have a few questions online, but perhaps if there's anyone in the room with questions first, we'll do those.
Remember, we don't have all the answers.
No, easy one. Where is Venezuela now?
Still having lots of trouble with their power. Yeah, so I think they still experience quite a lot of partial blackouts, but they haven't had a total blackout, so I think they're managing, yeah.
Thank you. I think that kind of feeds into my question. So we sort of spoke about the history behind load shedding. So for example, 2018 only had like 128 hours or something of load shedding compared to the 4,000 hours we've seen this year. What sort of, you know, the actuarial projection of how many hours of load shedding, how many years can we expect load shedding to go on for? If you have like some sort of answer.
So good question. I think at this point, there's a lot of components that are feeding into the current state of load shedding that we're seeing. It would be very difficult for us to, I think we have very limited information in terms of initiatives that are sitting on the other end as well to try and project that. So we don't know. That's the best answer I can give you there.
Yeah, I think it is difficult to say because also as we increase, you know, solar panels, and as we increase getting generating power off the grid, that's only going to help the grid. It's only going to help things. So, one of the stats that we looked for was to see, you know, like what's the difference now? How much power is being used by the grid, by everyone, with all of these new solar panels on, and how much is the solar panels? But like that sort of data is quite, because you won't really find it in one place. But yeah, I mean, it's difficult to say because it's a supply-demand thing that we don't have the answer to.
Oh, Janine or Amanda. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So the question I have is, how have insurers in Venezuela or any of the other countries or regions which experience outage responded to that?
So I think very similarly to how we've put it out in the presentation of the opportunities and responses, very much similar scene in other countries.
Thanks. Just want to ask around the SASRIA circular that was put out. First question is that definitely excluded now? Because I saw, I think 2 weeks later, they rescinded the circular, and then I don't know if they went ahead with it again. And then second question around, if there was a total blackout and nothing is covered by insurers, do you have any idea who would then possibly pay for those losses? Or would it just result in like complete collapse of, I guess, all businesses?
So I didn't see the withdrawal, so I'll have to look up that and I'll get back to you on that. So I know, like, I mean, we put it out as an exclusion and we're not going to offer it. But, I mean, if someone's house burns down because of load shedding and they are without their house and you the insurer, you know, you kind of like, you're not going to just leave them sitting on the side of the road. So I think you'd see that there would be some sort of support from the insurance company. I think there would be some sort of support from the government, which basically means taxpayers. But that's why I think like there would be a recession in many forms as everyone tries to rebuild following that blackout.
So slightly away from the insurance, but still related to load shedding. As someone who's obviously done a lot of research on load shedding, what's your take on these Russian ships versus the climate change impact?
Russian ships?
You know those ships they want to... I forgot what they're called, the ones they want to dock at. So what are they called? Yeah, those, yeah.
I think you should join the team, Ting, Atich. We don't have information on the Russian ship, so that's a good input.
Right, so one of the questions online was regarding your electrical outage data and at what point, if you know at what point that was collected, and whether it includes the outages in China from the heat wave in 2022.
That's the World Bank.
The World Bank data, I think that's if I'm not mistaken, up until 2022.
And then there was another question on excesses and whether you've seen some companies implementing increases in excesses rather than the increase in premiums for power surge.
Yeah, so I think there have been other insurance companies who have introduced excesses in terms of their power surge claims to try and limit the amount of claims and claim amount of claims and claim sizes of claims that are reported as a result of power surges, given that you can't really, those are still insurable risks. So to try and again reduce the pressure on premiums, they've introduced those.
And another question about, you mentioned that the probability of the total grid failure was quite low, and if you've done any work in terms of calculating what that actual, like how you arrived at the conclusion that it's quite a low probability.
Yeah, so, I mean, for a total blackout to occur, it really means that the demand on the system is quite hard, and that, I mean, if we had an explosion in one of our big power plants, then that would obviously cause quite devastation. But because of this load shedding, where they keeping track very closely in terms of what the demand is, they're looking at in terms of times, they're looking at in terms of amount, they're looking at in areas and all of that. So the amount of work that they're doing really is making a big impact in terms of whether a blackout's going to occur. I haven't done the maths, but it's not something that I think that we need to all rush and go by and hoard water in our house for, because I don't see it happening.
I think there was another question this side.
So many questions, no one eager for lunch.
Just a quick question. Do you think the higher stages of load shedding could have a similar impact to the blackouts? And I don't know, maybe those exclusions might not help so much if there's like higher stages of load shedding that has similar impact to
blackout. I think what higher stages mean is that you either have to have frequent load shedding during the day or longer periods of load shedding. I think a blackout at this point, I think so far the longest of hours we're currently experiencing in terms of load shedding is at around about 4 hours. A total blackout, I think, would have to be a number of days of a total power outage. So based on the stages that we have, we'd either have like frequent stages within a 24-hour cycle or much longer periods of load shedding, so maybe 6-7 hours. But that wouldn't directly translate to a total blackout, given that the grid is still expected to get up once the load has been shed from the system.
All right, another online question on whether the reason for the insurers putting in the exclusions for grid failure is a result from the reinsurers putting that into their T's and C's.
That would definitely have an impact. I think it was the reinsurers that started it. And then, I mean, that puts a lot of pressure on the insurers. And then, I mean, when SASRIA is also not going to cover it, that puts even more pressure on. But it was the reinsurers that did start the trend.
I think I'm just going to do one more online one so that we can get to lunch. How do insurers mitigate the secondary risks from grid failure, such as riots and looting, given what happened in July 2021?
Good question again. I think that's kind of the purpose of why we kind of came up with this presentation. I think we're trying to get to a point where we're creating a conversation and kind of raising some of these questions and some of the things that insurers kind of have to consider, and one of them being secondary impacts of, similar to what we had in COVID, where for business interruption cover, that was claims related to COVID are not covered, but some other insurers had to end up forking that out. So I think out of the whole thing, what we're trying to get to is the point where these things or some of these questions kind of need to be asked, and looking at where insurers can start implementing some of these in terms of their strategic planning, as Janine would mention, and some of the cover that they provide as well, and how they can incorporate this into their business.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Amanda. Thanks, Janine. Thank you.